the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Well, hello, guys, and welcome back to the Man City Pod. As always, we have plenty to talk about this week. We are, of course, Wembley-bound after that win over Bristol. There's been another new contract signing, and we have also added a little bit of spice to this week's pod with a little bit of a discussion between myself and the two Pauls around our favourite player predating this current squad. So do stay tuned for that. I'm really looking forward to seeing who the guys have picked and having a little bit of a discussion as to why. Hello, Pauls.
Morning.
How are we all?
Good, good. How's everybody this week? Buzzing, I'm sure, as we are heading to Wembley. Paul, Sarahs, were you at the Bristol game?
I was, yes. I went down to Bristol on Tuesday evening, and I always, you know what, it can become, you know, watching football when you have to, I guess, can become, I'm not complaining, but you can become complacent about how lucky you are, you know, to do it as a job.
And
you know, so it's really nice to go. I try and go as much as I can as a supporter. I was a City fan, a football fan, long before I did it as a job, you know. It's really nice to go out and meet a few of the lads and ladies and have some drinks before the game and go as a supporter and watch a game. So it kind of re-energizes you, you know, it reignites that passion inside. So I had a great time. I was in the third row from the front behind the goal, so I didn't
get
a particularly good overview of the game, but yeah, it was great to go and the away support with City is always brilliant. So it was a great evening. And of course, you know, it would have been a great evening even if we hadn't made it to Wembley. And, you know, Wembley is a huge, huge bonus. Something I think that people, you know, people are quick to talk down the League Cup. They're quick to talk down the new Wembley. I think that might be more to do with like the modern condition rather than the competition or the stadium itself. But I love Wembley. I'd never miss an opportunity to go to Wembley with City. Yeah. And, you know, it was great. It was a great evening, and I'm excited for another cup final and Pep's first with City, of course.
Yes, absolutely, Paul. What a massive game it's going to be. Pep's first final. Paul Dickov, first of all, what did you make of the game at Ashton Gate?
I felt like the first leg, it was a really good game to watch. I know we gave Bristol City and Lee Johnson a lot of credit for the first leg. I think a lot of credit's got to go to them again for never giving up. But City were... And Man City were superior from the start.
Yeah.
I think the manager's got to take a lot of credit again, not just for the performance, but how he's treated this tournament from the very start. You know, we live in a world now where cup competitions for a lot of clubs, you see so many changes, whether it be in the League Cup or in the FA Cup. And the team he put out was a statement of intent that they wanted to keep the run going after Newcastle. They wanted to get to the final and they want to win every single game. And I think he's got to take credit, and a lot of people haven't picked up on that one. You know, to go into that game against a Championship team, a lot of games coming up, and to pick the team that he picked showed everybody that he wants to win trophies, and that's why he's here. And that's what fans want to see. You're talking about, you were there, Paul. I bet you the fans were buzzing when they seen the team line. I know I was.
Yeah, of course.
Go into it, you know, because you're travelling all that way to Bristol. You want to see your De Bruynes, you want to see your David Silvers, you want to see your Agüeros, you want to see all the top boys play. And I'm pretty sure in Bristol City got the team sheet an hour before kickoff, and Lee Johnson seen it. Mentally, as well as they've done, it would have took the edge off them a little bit, because deep down, and I've been there myself, they would have been hoping that there would have been 5, 6, 7 changes to give them a little bit of a chance. They spoke about the mentality of the team a lot in the last couple of weeks. I think if you look at when Bristol City equalised at 2-2 in 93, 94 minutes, any other team in the country would have seen out the last 90 seconds and kept it at 2-2, job done, through to the final. Not this Man City team. They want to win every single game. And when you look at Kevin De Bruyne's goal, we had 4 players in the opposition box breaking their necks to get in there. And for me, that sums up what this team's all about. And to get to Pep's first final, my tickets are already booked to go down there. I cannot wait. against one of my, obviously one of my former clubs as
on
well.
The party bus.
Yeah, you better believe it. There and back for a week. You know, against Arsenal as well, which will be a difficult game. It'll be a great game to watch. You know, big Wembley pitch, two teams that have got fantastic attacking players. You know, if you believe the rumours of Aubameyang coming in, that'll give Arsenal something different. And all the City fans back to Wembley and get Pep's first trophy. And it's going to be great.
Absolutely. Sergio Aguero on the score sheet last night. Again, you mentioned Paul Dick of the game against Newcastle, of course, which won 3-1, and a Sergio hat-trick. Paul Serres, there's been a lot of talk around Sergio this season, but he's answering with his feet, isn't he?
He is, of course he is. And you know, he has no control over what's said about him. And I think that's, you know, it's just the way that the modern game is, with 24-hour rolling sports news channels and sports news dailies, particularly in Spain, that have, you know, column inches to fill. There's only so much you can do with results and predictions and previews and things like that. And, you know, we live in an age in football where clicks are king, and clickbait articles and click rage, you know, it's all the same to the money men in charge, because they still get their clicks. And, you know, I don't know if there's any truth in it. I don't know if Sergio is happy or wants to go. We've known all along that Independiente is his club. He wants to finish his career there. Yeah. Look, he is 100% committed to Manchester City. What happens in the future will happen. He might stay longer. We've had a spate of contracts being renewed of key players at City in recent weeks and months. Yeah. Who knows? He may sign an extension and delay his return home. He may go in the summer. I have no idea. But while he's here, he's not. Look, to succeed as a professional footballer, you have to have that commitment to being the best you can be from a very young age and throughout your career. And there's no doubt that Sergio Aguero has got that, and he will not try and coast through the rest of the season if he wants to move on. He will give his best, and that's all we can ask of him, you know. So a hat-trick against Newcastle. He loves playing against Newcastle. They must be sick of the sight of him. And we know that he'll give his best for us, and that's good enough. So,
absolutely.
You know, the rumours will continue as they have done, you know, distantly throughout his time at City. But he's always said that he's happy, you know, so we have to take that at face value. And while he's here, he'll have our support. And when he leaves, whether that's, you know, next week or next year or in 5 years' time, he will leave as the player, one of the players responsible for the greatest moment in the history of our football club. So he'll go with our blessing and with our thanks and as a legend.
That's lovely. What lovely words.
Yeah,
very nice,
true.
Very nice.
And true words as well.
And true.
You know, just on that, guys, I don't get this Aguero thing and where it keeps surfacing from. You know, how many times does Pep come out and say that he wants him to stay? Sergio comes out all the time and says he wants to stay. He's contracted to 2020. I think they just must be bored, and there's no stories out there, so let's go back to the Aguero one. And if a player's not happy and a player wants to leave, or he doesn't get on with the manager and vice versa, you can tell by their body language straight away. If Sergio wasn't happy here, the way players have got power now within the club, and his relationship with everybody in the club as well, it would be out there and he would be gone. You know, these rumours have been going on for the last 18 months now. And, you know, last season when he was left out, and it wasn't because he was rested or anything else, his reaction to that was fantastic. You know, a time when you had Diego Costa saying he was going on strike, you had Dimitri Payet at West Ham digging his heels in, he got left out and he got his head down and he walked his socks off and was so professional about it. And we're talking about one of the best strikers in the world here.
One thing
that made me smile and made me quite proud the other night there was the way he celebrated at the end of the game. He was absolutely delighted. He'd just been taken off. He wants to play every minute of every game and score the goals. And when De Bruyne scored that goal and they got through to the final, went onto the bench, Pep was celebrating, and so was Sergio Aguero. And I know I said a few weeks ago on here about his celebration in the Derby game at Old Trafford, where he was left out during the game, which he would have been devastated at, because it's Manchester United at Old Trafford. Yeah. Huge, huge game. The manager brings Gabriel Jesus off and brings a midfielder on and still leaves Sergio on the bench. When the players celebrated with the fans at the end of the game, you would have thought that Sergio had scored the winner, the way he celebrated. Now, his disappointment, and I've been there, I've not been in the pitch, a lot of players, if not most, would have walked down the tunnel and congratulated his teammates, but went in there, and deep down they would have been gutted that he wasn't on the pitch, and a little bit angry, but he's shown no signs of that. And I'll go back to my first point, I just don't know where they keep getting this from, because all the time he said he wants to stay. We all know that he wants to go to Independiente, as Paul said before, at the end. And for me, we're still in January, and he's been in and out the team at times, and he's got 23 goals again. You know, I think this will be the fourth or fifth consecutive season that he's looking to score 30 plus goals. Yeah. You know, if you're not happy somewhere and you don't get on with the manager, if all these rumours happen, that doesn't, you don't do that. No. For me, he's the greatest of all time in the Manchester City shirt, and his record shows that, as in strikers and goal scorers.
Absolutely. An absolute legend now and well into the future, Paul, as you say.
Absolutely. Okay,
guys, back to that, the League Cup final, which will take place on Sunday, 25th of February, of course, at Wembley against Arsenal. Paul's already booked a seat on the party bus, as have I, actually. Paul Serres, you'll also be there. Paul Serres, what do you make of Arsenal? Obviously, Sanchez gone. Could have been a little bit of an uncertain time for them, I imagine. This will give them a little bit of a boost, and Arsene Wenger certainly seemed happy. And of course, he's never won this trophy in his 22 years at Arsenal, so he will be well up for this.
He will, absolutely. And I remember the last time they made the final against Birmingham. Do you remember Obafemi Martin scored that very late goal to win it for Birmingham, and he was gutted. And you know, I think, you know, we're in a period of globalization, not just in the world, but in football, and I think that you know, Champions League reigns supreme everywhere, probably apart from here in England. You know, and I think that the focus on that from supporters from outside of these borders, it devalues things like the League Cup and the FA Cup too, to a certain, probably lesser extent. But here's the situation: at the end of the season, there are three trophies to be won in England. Three major trophies, and they are the Premier League, the FA Cup and the League Cup. And in Europe, the Europa League suffers as well. It's become, you know, the butt of many jokes. But at the end of the season in Europe, there are two major trophies to be won. Mm-hmm. And you'd rather win them than not. And look, you look at the teams that are in the final, Manchester City and Arsenal, they're two of the best teams in the country. So obviously there is an importance placed on that competition, more so within England than elsewhere. I think it seems an inconvenience for many, but not for Arsene Wenger, and he will be desperate, absolutely desperate to complete the lot, I guess, and to add this trophy to his personal trophy cabinet. And what better way to answer critics to lift another trophy? And as I said, only three English teams will do that this season in domestic football. And if I'm being completely honest, I would prefer to play Arsenal from an aesthetic point of view than to play Chelsea. But I think we were probably better suited to playing a Chelsea side that are less expressive. They are more not particularly defensive per se, but a more defensive-minded side, a better organised side than Arsenal. Yeah. Because as we've seen in recent weeks, if we go toe-to-toe with the team able to play football, able to play at that high tempo, then we can struggle. City can struggle. Liverpool, Bristol City over two games. Even Crystal Palace, you know, Crystal Palace were on the front foot against City and we struggled in that. So, you know, I think from a winning the cup perspective, it would have been the better team. But in terms of how the game will play out and how entertaining it will be, I think Arsenal is the prime of maybe of anybody in the, you know, in the competition, probably the best team to play for a good day out and a good game of football at Wembley. But look, I mean, we've not come all this way to lose it now. We want to win this competition, and I think that for those of us who have been around for a while following City, remember the very, very lean years. I don't think anybody would ever turn their nose up at any trophy, domestic yeah. or European.
Yeah,
so
that's it.
There's nothing like one of the seminal moments of my life was City winning the FA Cup at Wembley, you know, not just in football, but my life, which is probably quite sad to some.
Yeah.
Hopefully
you need to get out more often,
Paul. I knew you'd come in with something. Yeah. But you know, that was it. I said last week, I'm nearly 39 and I'd resigned myself a long time ago to never seeing my team win a thing. And it was all right. It was fine. I'd come to terms with that. But to then go on and win the FA Cup at Wembley with Yaya scoring the goals that he did on route to the final and in the final was amazing. It was amazing. So that'll never become old.
No, absolutely. And funny, it's interesting when you talk to City fans. Of course, the Premier League title win in 2012, you know, it was something else. But it's amazing how many of them will actually say the FA Cup, like you say, you know, in 2011, just as you say, the first piece of silverware at that level, and the, you know, it's just an incredible moment.
I think part of that is the semi-final against United. I think, you know, we'd beaten them before, and we'd got the better of them a few times, but I think that was the first time that really we went into a game thinking we're better than these, and we're going to win it, and we did. And typical City, to an extent, was banished that day, you know, and they, you know, it was they couldn't take what happened in the last day of the season, 2011-2012, but that was the beginning, that was the start of that, you know. They were no longer untouchable, and we were no longer easy pickings. So that was the beginning of it, and that was when we arrived, you know, and we've been there ever since now. So, you know, that was a seminal moment in the modern history of our football club.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul Diggove, more good news coming out of the club this week, just off the back of Otamendi's new contract. Kevin De Bruyne. Has signed his new deal, keeping him at the club until 2023. Music to everyone's ears.
Absolutely. We're talking about the best player in Europe at the minute, without a shadow of a doubt. I thought it was quite ironic from the club that they announced it the same day as Sanchez got announced. it did make me laugh going through social media on Monday or Tuesday, I think it was. All the City fans tweeting the best signing of the window, best signing of the season, and everything else was going on. But I've got to agree to that, you know, to tie him down in a 5-year contract just shows you where the club's going. I know he's been fantastic for the since he's come into the club. He's been absolutely unbelievable. That combination that he's got in partnership with David Silva in there has to be up there in the positions as the best in Europe. And you know, you talk about the players Barcelona have got, and PSG, and all the big clubs around Europe. For City to have day two in there and playing the way they're playing is phenomenal. And people forget with Kevin, he's still only 26, and he's still got more and more to come and better to come. I watched him the other night there in Bristol City, and he looked as if he didn't break sweat. He just made the game look so easy every time he got the ball. We talk about his assists, we talk about his ability. The little turning ball to Sergio was fantastic. And then the attitude that he's got and his work rate and his desire to get in the box in the 95th minute and to score the goal just says it all for everybody else. Huge boost for the club. Huge statement by the club as well. And, you know, from when... But quite funny, just before we started doing this, guys, I don't know, have you ever seen the... I was watching a video of Soccer Saturday with Phil Thompson and Paul Merson. Talking about Kevin De Bruyne. Have you seen it?
I have.
I don't think I have, to be honest.
Yeah, they were just basically saying it was when De Bruyne signed, how he didn't cut it at Chelsea, how he went to Wolfsburg and was good, but they're not that great a team, and it's just they can't get their head round, they can't see him being a success. And this week, it just shows you what can come back to bite you in the backside. they're more or less saying he was useless and he was a poor signing for 50 million. Now you're talking about, as we've already said, the best player in Europe. He's just a phenomenal. He's got everything.
Everything.
You know, and you've got to give him credit as well, and the manager credit, because before Pep came in, you looked at Kevin De Bruyne as a wide player, possibly a number 10. Played the false nine a couple of times. But now, for him to play, he's like a quarterback in American football. Everything that we've got, his passing range and everything else. So he's adapted his game as well, hugely, under the manager. And, you know, going forward, I speak all the time about the age of the team and the squad. You know, signing a five-year deal at 26, and then you've got Ederson at 24, you've got John Stones, Mendy 23, Gabriel Jesus 20, Sané 21, Raheem Sterling 23. You know, going forward, the next 4 or 5 years, it's really, really scary for other teams if they look at that. Because you look how good they are now, and you look how good they're going to be in 3 or 4 years' time. That's going to be amazing.
That's it. No, it's just fantastic news. And as Paul Sarah said, I don't know, but Raheem, is, if you believe what you read, is maybe next for his contract renewal. And it does definitely seem like the club are trying to, as you say, Paul, get that team nailed down, because the future looks extremely bright. Yeah.
And why wouldn't they want to stay?
Exactly.
You know, way it's going. Yeah. I know we spoke about Sergio before and his desire to go to Independiente. Everybody knows that, that's going to happen at some point in the future. But the younger ones in the squad and the players that are in that squad, they want to be there, you know. And if you're offered a new contract at Man City now, you're going to sign it without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'm going to move on to a little bit of transfer talk before we delve into our favourite player feature, which I'm very much looking forward to. So just quickly, a look at a little bit of transfer talk. Obviously, as we said before, Sanchez gone to United, so that is gone, as we thought last week anyway, that would be the case. Laporte, a lot of talk around Laporte of currently of Athletic Bilbao, Paul Saras.
Well, we've spoken about Johnny Evans too in recent weeks, haven't we? And I think the move away from Evans and the move back towards Aymeric Laporte is interesting. I mean, Laporte is he fits the profile better. I think he's only 23. He's played almost 200 games for Athletic Club, which at 23 years old is it is, but particularly for a central defender. You know, he's been a mainstay of their starting 11 for a number of years already. And, you know, they put going back to when he was 16 or 17, Bilbao gave him a new contract and put a release clause of €20 million in that contract to ward off interest from so many clubs who had already become aware of how good he already was and how good he could potentially become. He's not perfect. I mean, nobody's perfect, but I think he's very comfortable with the ball at his feet. He's a pretty tall, he's 6'3", 6'4", maybe, you know, lacking a little bit of pace, but I think in a possession-based side, which obviously City are, one that are willing to play high up the pitch and play in the opposition's half, you know, he fits the profile really well. He's an excellent passer of a ball. He keeps possession well. I think that this is an exciting signing, and it's interesting, really, that City are known for, you know, being an incredibly attacking team, and yet all of the reinforcements, all of the major reinforcements, you know, from the summer and from the players that we've been linked with in this window are all defensive players.
Yes,
you know, and it just goes to it's indicative, really, of how the collective is so much more important than individual. Again, it's something that we've spoken about before on the podcast, but Pep's spoken every time he's been asked about good people and about how he has to make sure that when a new player comes into the club, they fit, not only in terms of tactics and technically, but in terms of the harmony within the squad. He wants people that want to win, desperately win, and he wants people that are easygoing, and he doesn't want cliques in the dressing room. He doesn't want, you know, the Spanish speakers over there and the English speakers over here. It's about the collective, and that is absolutely crucial to success going forward for Manchester City. And I think Laporte can he's at an age where, you know, most centre backs are only really coming into the first team, you know, at 23. So
we've got
an opportunity to exactly, and he's young enough to grow exponentially under Pep's guidance, you know. Yeah. So this is an I know, you know, the signing of a centre back is never really that exciting. They're seen more as somebody who is, you know, there to keep things solid, but that's not the case with this team.
Steady the ship, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the case because we attack as a unit. Defend as a unit, and we keep possession as a unit, and that is absolutely vital. Yeah, they have absolutely. And 100%. You know, when there's no space, when there's no room, I mean, we saw it, you know, in the 90s when English football sort of moved away from that 4-4-2 and the Bergkamps and the Zolas came in and the Cantonas and players like that and played between those lines. And we saw sort of the development of the Makalele type defensive midfielder that was brought in to combat that. Now, there's no space between the lines really anymore when you're playing 85-90% of teams for Manchester City, because they sit so deep, those lines are compressed together. Yeah. And you need to go deeper on the pitch to create. That's why Fernandinho is such a vital player for City. That's why Andrea Pirlo became such an important footballer for Juventus in that time that they were dominant in Serie A, you know.
Yeah.
So we're getting to a point where we want creative centre-backs, players to break the press with diagonal passes out wide to the Raheems and the Leroy Sanés of the team, and to turn that possession into quick vertical attacks. And you know, Aymeric Laporte fits that profile very well, and it's an exciting sign if it happens, of course.
Absolutely. You mentioned Fernandinho, Paul, and that brings us on to another rumoured transfer, which is Fred, of course, another Brazilian, and another, obviously, currently at Shakhtar Donetsk, where Fernandinho came from, of course. Rumours that he may come in to possibly be Fernandinho's successor. Fernand, now 32, of course, although still an incredible engine, but the miles he's done for the club.
And just signed a new contract as well.
And just signed a new contract, Paul Dicko. But is it a smart move to maybe look at the likes of Fred, who could maybe come into that role?
Yeah, and whether the rumours are true or not, that he's a player. You know, in both games against Shakhtar, I thought he was outstanding. You know, he's not when you look at defensive midfielders, you think that he's just going to break things up and tackle, but he can play. He's strong, he's quick, and he stood out in both games for me. The Fernandinho one, you know, we wax lyrical about him all the time. If we take him out of the team, we don't have the same balance there. There's nobody. Look at Yaya, wonderful, wonderful player, can come and sit in there. Danny Lowe's done a good job at times sitting in front of the back four, but they're not Fernandinho and what he brings to this team. So to bring somebody in as a future replacement for him, and somebody of that quality, it would be great. And it is a squad game now. You know, I look at the signing of Bernardo Silva last year. You know, the people are talking about eventually taking over from David Silva. Now Bernardo Silva's probably not started as much as he would have wanted. He was, alongside Mbappe, one of the best players in the Champions League last year, and he's had to come in and bide his time because he knows it's all about now, but it's about the future as well. And if you look at the club's transfer policy, the ages of the players that have been signing over the last couple of seasons, it is for the future. They want to win the here and now, of course they do. We want to win trophies this season, but it is about next season, the season after, and the season after that. And that's why I never get this thing when people say that Pep's not here for the long term. A sign of a manager who wants to build something, for me, a lot of it comes down to the ages of the players that they sign. And that tells me that he's here for the next 4 or 5 years because he wants to dominate.
Absolutely.
That's it. And Fred's only 24, and again, a bit like Laporte, he's
it fits the bill, doesn't it?
It does, exactly.
It does.
And also the club. With Fred, his arguably his weaknesses are probably decision making, and he's a bit too much of a player for that old style defensive midfielder. He likes to keep hold of the ball. He likes to try and dribble at players and beat his man. And you know, these are things that are often can be a weakness, but also you can use those things to your advantage. It's another attacking threat from a deep position on the pitch, and these are also things that, you know, with Guardiola's style and philosophy and the way that City are playing football, these things are easily remedied. You know, his desire to hold on to the ball might be indicative of the fact that he's surrounded by players that aren't quite up to his level. He feels a responsibility that he has to do more, that he has to try and make things happen more than he would do in a Pep team, where he can give the ball to Kevin De Bruyne or to David Silva and know that within 15 or 20 seconds, he's got it back. So he doesn't have to shoulder as much responsibility, and that can be a huge, huge thing for him personally. And he's another young player. And I think, you know, I think even if City do buy him this month, I think he'll still remain where he is for the rest of the season. And I think that, you know, it's easy to like Pep, particularly if you're a City supporter. But I think the thing that I really like about Pep the most is he's not interested in getting involved in the circus whatsoever.
Yeah.
I think he wants to get those summer transfers done now. And he's definitely got an eye on what City will need going forward rather than what City are lacking at the moment. And, you know, that means that these players will have a full pre-season. There won't be any, you know, negotiating, to-ing and fro-ing with agents and clubs and bidding wars with other teams in the summer. Get the business done now. Get those players in on the 1st of June or whenever, you know, whenever the pre-season starts. Take them on tour, work with them. You've got time to work with them individually so they get to learn what's expected of them, what their role is in the team, how they will interact on the pitch with other players around them. And it's just good business, you know, it's totally really the smart way of doing things. So, yeah, it's an exciting time to be a City supporter, that's for sure, and particularly with players like Fred and Aymeric Laporte being linked.
Absolutely.
Just on the point with Fred there as well, and look, he has got little flaws. I personally think he'd be a great signing. I think he's a top class player, but when you're that age and if he comes to the club, he's going to be coached by the best coach in the world.
Yeah.
Without a shadow. And also, I know a lot of clubs, and especially at City now, they want their older players to mentor their younger players, and what better teacher would they have than Fernandinho?
Exactly.
You wouldn't even have to. You just tell them to watch him in training.
Yep.
And watch him in games, and go and repeat that as well. You know. And
And also, that's
what you do. You know, as much
solid
as
solid guy.
Yep, 100, and he'll want to help. He will want to help him, and you can tell that he's a fantastic attitude. He wants to help the younger.
And not only. You know, not only are they quite similar in terms of, you know, in football terms, but also, you know, Fernandinho made that move to Ukraine at a relatively young
very
age.
Very similar background.
It's very, very similar indeed. And you know, it must
that
be daunting,
helps,
even for, even
really
for
helps.
Footballers. Even for footballers who we spoke about it earlier, you know, it's the nature of the job that you might be somewhere for 6 months and then move to the other side of the world for a year and then back and forth. And that sort of that arm around the shoulder that, you know, that Fred will look up to Fernandinho as a player, but as a man as well. And
absolutely.
He's made that same journey as Fred, and he knows the difficulties. He knows exactly what Fred will need to settle, not just as a player, but as a human being in a new country, new culture, new language, new city. So in football, we tend to forget about the people and to concentrate on the player. But we're all human. And it's really important that somebody is there to do that. Exactly.
Totally. I remember actually doing an interview with Ferna once, and I said to him, you're from, you know, from Brazil, Shakhtar. How did you know the weather? How did you cope with those minus temperatures? He said, it was fine. I just had barbecues in my garage.
brilliant. Well, that in itself, you know, just shows you the type of guy that he is.
Exactly. He's the most unassuming, lovely, down-to-earth person. And, yeah, you know, I just could not be happier for someone like him. When you see him doing well, and, you know, it's just fantastic. And like you say, there's so much experience, both footballing life and personal life, he can pass on. If, of course, Fred is to make that move, time will tell. Just under a week, of course, the transfer window closes. So we shall know by the next time we record the pod what is going on in the world of transfers. So thanks for that, guys. Okay, on to our little week's feature. I'll just give us a couple of minutes each. I know it's not long, but I'm really, really excited just to have this little discussion. So the question I posed to both Pauls and to myself this week was, who is your favourite player, who was your favourite player, I should say, to watch week in, week out, excluding the current squad? So we will start with yourself, Paul Dickoff. I'm really interested to see who you've gone for.
Yeah, well, the easy way out for me would have probably to have picked somebody that I played with.
Yeah.
You know, there were some wonderful players. You know, I thought about Ali Benarbia, who was fantastic. Even going back to thinking not just on the pitch, but the whole package, characters, engine room. And then I even thought about my old roommate, Ian Bishop, people like that. Yeah. But, it was what a player.
You and Ian Bishop sharing a room, that was some crack.
Oh, I tell you what. So that's a completely different pod that couldn't get broadcasted altogether.
We'll save that for a special.
Yeah, we will do. I've went for somebody that, for me, and a fantastic team, is the tide we're turning. And I love the way Paul put it before, as when we're taking over United, you know, when the noisy neighbours were getting noisier and noisier all the time. Yeah. And I'm not going to go for a striker. I'm going to go for Nigel de Jong. Oh, I just thought he was
NDJ
character off the pitch. But what a winner on the pitch. Yeah. You know, and we talk about Fernandinho. I thought the difference that he gave that team at that time, and when we started getting successful, when we started overtaking United and winning trophies, he was one of the main ones for me. You know, I got to know him very well as a person. Great guy, very humble, very funny. But on the pitch, you know, there was a reason why he was nicknamed the Destroyer and the Lawnmower.
You know,
because because he was hard as nails, but could play a bit as well. And every team needs that. You know, he was a leader, and that team at that time was full of, obviously, he had Vincent and Nigel sitting in front of them, and look. We know the attacking flair that we had back then, the goals that we were scoring and everything else. But for me, he was the mainstay of the team, and just a great guy, somebody the fans could relate to as well. The fans loved him because he gave his absolute all and left nothing on the pitch, played with his heart. And every team needs one of them, and that's why I've went for NDG.
Happy days. Okay, love it, Paul Dickoff. Paul Sarris, who have you gone for?
This is harder actually than it appears at first. I thought about players that I used to love when I was a kid. I remember Imre Vardy playing for City in the 80s, and I loved him. I don't know why particularly. I was quite young at the time, and
I was going to say you're giving away your age here.
Yeah, I am. You'd never believe it, but of course, there was King Cladsey, who was a breath of fresh air in a pretty dark and dismal time for City supporters. And in the end, I've gone for a player that, a bit like Gio, was absolutely a breath of fresh air. He was sensational in a team that before the current era was probably the best time in my lifetime to follow City. And that player is Ali Benarbia. And remember the season under Kevin Keegan when City won the first division with 99 points, scored over 100 goals. And he'd come in at the beginning of that season, and nobody really knew a great deal about him. But Kevin Keegan, to his immense credit, with Monaco when they played against Keegan's Newcastle a few years before in the Champions League. And he came in, this short little guy with his shorts always seemed a little bit too big for him. But when he was on the ball... when he was on the ball, it was magic, you know. Yeah. And and
what a player!
Honestly, just the impact that he made in that season when City won promotion back to the Premier League was breathtaking. It was spellbinding. And you know, City conceded more than 50 in the league that year, so we needed somebody to create like Benabia did. And Gota, I think, scored nearly 30 league goals that season. And you know, it was just a great time to follow City. And I was lucky enough to meet Ali Benabia actually, and the game that opened the Etihad against Barcelona, he was outside you know, speaking to the fans, and he had his newborn daughter in his arms, and he was just an absolute gentleman, like a complete gentleman, and just a really, really, he seemed like a really good bloke, and he loved his time at City, and he's a pundit now, and very highly thought of in France with beIN Sport and a couple of radio stations as well. But he was a shining light in what was a great team and a great time for Manchester City. And the only regret is that he didn't come to us a few years earlier, so we could have had him a bit longer, you know, because he was that good. And one of the few players, I think, between the classic teams of the 70s and the current era, that would have been at home in any of those teams. You know, I think he could have played today in this City team and definitely not been out of place. So Ali B is my one, and he was universally loved by the supporters as well.
Yeah, and by his teammates as well. I was there I played with Alan and trained with him. And what a fantastic guy. And we used to say his players, you know, I think he was 33, 34 when he came to us.
Yeah.
And we used to sit in the change room and talk about how good Ali would have been when he was 23, 24. And what a crying shame it was that we couldn't have got him 3 or 4 years or even 5 years earlier. He used to wind me up in training because you couldn't get anywhere near him. He wasn't necessarily the quickest. Yeah, I couldn't even. I used to try and kick him, but couldn't get anywhere near him either. And he's the only player. He's the only player I've played with or against or in training that could knock you when you had your legs closed. He was that good.
He
used to properly take the mickey, and he was a great lad. He would knock you in training and you'd be raging and he would run away with the ball laughing at you, you know, because he was just a real character. But what an unbelievable player. And as Paul said, that season, I doubt if Ali hadn't have come in that we would have got promoted, purely because of the goals we conceded, you know, and the 99 goals and everything else. And the GOATs. Ali, the GOAT scored loads of goals. The GOAT's the GOAT, and we all love him. But he'll admit himself that Ali, he must have got probably about 75% of the assists that season. He was there. Yeah. He was that good.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. Thanks so much, Paul Serres. Fantastic. Well, that just leaves my own player. And having joined City... as a staff member early 2012, I've enjoyed watching so many top-class players. And as you said earlier, Paul Serres, it is a privilege. And sometimes you can lose sight of it, and you know, week in, week out, and you're travelling, excuse me, to games, home and away, and you think, goodness, you know, but, you know, it is important to kind of sit back and think about, actually, you know, the luxury of watching these players. And excluding the current squad, for me, it has to be Carlos Tevez.
Carlito,
yes. I just, honestly, even just thinking about this during the week, I just thought of some of the games and some of the goals he scored and just some of the performances he put in and just the way he scurried around the pitch like a little frenzied animal, you know, with something between his teeth the whole time. You know, I just... absolutely loved watching him play and the energy he brought to the team and the effort he put in. And what I loved about Carlos was, you know, it could be your first line of defence, you know.
Yeah.
It could be in your final third, and the next moment he's up and he's creating chances or he's having a go himself. And I just adored watching him play. Just that furious kind of intensity that in his game. You know, the fact that he gave it all, he'd, you know, run and run until his lungs could, you know, take it no more. And then he could just have a moment of absolute brilliance and this flair would come out. And one of the the games that stood out for me was, do you remember that game against Stoke? It was the last game, I think the last game of the season in 2011. And he scored, I think he scored twice, maybe.
Yes, times. I think it was, I was going to say he got a brace, I think. Yeah, I do.
He got, didn't he? Yeah. And I think one of them, he was in the box and he beat two or three defenders and he just stuck it in the corner. And then the other goal, as I recall, I think was a free kick. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful free kick. And I think that kind of sums...
He had everything.
He had everything. He had absolutely everything. Of course, there were antics off the pitch. We're not going to...
Yes,
you know.
There was. But you know what? I think if you speak to most City supporters, or I would say a majority, if not all of them, they would look back at Carlos Tevez coming in a lovely way, you know,
absolutely,
because of what he'd done for
absolutely
the club,
yeah,
and not have a bad
course
word to say against him, you know. And
yeah,
the big thing for me was we were able to go to Manchester United and take one of their best players at the time.
Yeah, you know, welcome to Manchester.
Absolutely.
Sign will never be forgotten.
Class. That was different class. And one of the biggest compliments I've been paid is that somebody said Carlos Tevez was like Paul Dickov with ability. And I took that as a huge compliment, just to be mentioned in the same breath of him. I thought, I'll take that.
I definitely see the similarities there, honestly. I think, yeah, I think that, and that's it. I don't know, come on, I think that...
But he had ability and scored goals.
No, I totally, I do,
here's
I
the
definitely
thing,
see
here's
that.
The thing about... Here's the thing about Carlos Tevez. He was and still is a magnificent footballer. And I think... As a character, I think that there's something very, very endearing about him.
100%.
And, you know, we've spoken on this podcast before about managerial styles and about how even if you are a professional footballer on X amount of money every week and you know that your future and your family's future is secure and you're lucky enough to do what you love and be very wealthy because of it. Mm-hmm. If you go to work every day and you clash with your boss, That's a very difficult thing, and people hold footballers up to a different standard, I think, because of the money that they earn and because of the privilege that they have doing what so many people would love to do as a career. But at the end of the day, you know, second time I've said this, we're all human, and if there's a combative or a negative atmosphere when you're going to work and you feel like you're being singled out, That's a lonely place to be. And I think that Carlos Tevez, I think that he is, not I think, I know that he is just a simple guy in the nicest possible way who loves to be at home.
Yeah.
He loves his family. He loves where he's from. And he had this incredible talent that meant that other people around the world wanted to have him in their team. It would have been silly of him to just stay at home his whole career. People would have criticised him for that. But also people criticise him for the way that he always, you know, with his recent Chinese adventure, the way he went on strike, as the you know, media put it, when he went home to Argentina during his time at City. But I think the most City supporters see him as hugely important for the club. Mm-hmm. And in an era of increasing ego and arrogant,
and I think this,
arrogant
think
players,
a
he's a
part
good
of
guy
we are now as well.
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yes. And I was just thinking the same thing.
I don't think many people would be critical of Carlos Tevez that follow Manchester City, even after what happened.
Absolutely.
And I think that speaks volumes about him as a man rather than him as a player. I think people empathize with him. He's just a normal guy. You know, I've lived away from home and it wasn't easy. Home, I'm a bit of a homebody as well, so I'd connected with him on that level, it's never nice to hear people criticise Carlos Tevez for what he did, because at the end of the day, he's a human being like the rest of us. So
I remember being down at Carrington, and I'd many interviews with Carlos and many experiences with him, and they were always positive. I cannot say a word about him. I found him fantastic, but I remember you would be down there at Carrington, at the old training ground, and he would come to training and he might have had four or five people with him, his dad, his brother, and you know, people thought, well, this entourage, and it was you, as you say, he just loves his family. Mm-hmm. And that's just the type of person he is. And you know, listen, his contribution to Man City speaks for itself. He captained that team, of course, the FA Cup winning team, and he's an absolute legend. So listen, that is a lovely little trio there. That was three great names: Nigel De Jong, Ali Benarbi, and of course Tevez. So thanks for that, guys, and we'll have a think about what we're going to chat about next week. But before we sign off, we'll just have a quick look ahead at the fixtures. Of course, beginning with Cardiff on Saturday, away at Cardiff City in the FA Cup fourth round. Paul Dickoff, what are you expecting from that?
I expect a tough, tough game, as you would from any Neil Warnock team. You know, Cardiff, they're a bit of a sticky Christmas period, but sitting only 2 points off automatic promotion. You know, we've seen the difficult games we had against Wolves earlier on, Championship teams, and obviously the Bristol City there as well. And with the Cardiff fans behind them, it'll be a tough game, but with the quality City have got in their team, you would fully expect you would fully expect them to win. But Neil Warnock's got a I played under Neil for a very short space of time at Crystal Palace, and the one thing he will have is the players up for it. He's a proper character.
I'm
looking forward to seeing
him and Pep on the touchline,
you know, because
yes, well, exactly. Two complete characters going for it.
Yeah, they will
be. Imagine if Pep wins at Wembley. God, I wonder what his reaction will be like.
Yeah, I know, that'll be great. But Neil will have his team up for it.
Yes.
How are they going to play? Where are they going to sit back? Are they going to try and play football? I would doubt it very much. Neil will have his players right in the faces of every Manchester City player. And after being in the changing room on a match day with him, I know exactly what he'll be doing. But the quality City have got should see them win this quite comfortably, I think.
I think so. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, we've not kept a clean sheet in 2018. Not since Crystal Palace, and then we were quite fortunate, I think, to keep a clean sheet that day on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
I think that Neil Warnock is a wily old coach, probably quite old school in his methods, and
I can vouch for that.
You imagine my surprise, Paul, when I met him when he came back to Palace a few years ago, and I met him, and it was a thoroughly nice, likable man, and a
lovely guy.
Do you know what? I couldn't believe.
He seems it.
I couldn't believe it, and because I think I just took for granted what had been written about him and what had been said about him over so many years, and I was a little bit intimidated really to meet him. But I had a quick chat with him after the game, and I couldn't believe what a nice guy he was. But you know, he won't be passing that on to his players for Sunday's FA Cup game at all. He'll make sure he'll try and disrupt and get at City, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see a few of those long diagonals into the space behind the defence and look to exploit that that huge gap that City leave between goalkeeper and
pieces.
Sorry,
it's huge on set pieces.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yes. Massive. Yes.
And you know.
Yeah. Yep.
We don't concede many these days, set pieces really, but yeah, I mean, he's the kind of coach that would look to exploit that if possible. Look, it's a cup game. Who knows? Fernandinho might be late into the tap second minute and he might get sent. You know, they might win. They might win,
and
there might be only one Wembley appearance for us. But, you know, all things equal, we would expect City to go down there and to come back in the draw for the fifth round of the cup. But it's been a while since we played Cardiff, I think, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's been a while. I've been down there a couple of times before, and the atmosphere was always fantastic. The people were always great. So listen, I think it'll be a great game. Then we finish off the month on Wednesday, 31st of January, hosting West Brom in the league. And then there's a host of fixtures, of course, to come next month, the return of the Champions League. So we've loads to talk about when we get together again. But listen, guys, thank you so much. Another great pod, and really, really great to speak to you. And thank you for your contributions with the favourite players feature. Please let us know how you're finding the pod. We'd really, really love to hear your feedback. You can find me at @McCarthy_MCFC, and I'll let the polls give you their Twitter handles. Paul Dickoff?
Yep, official P. Dickoff.
Official P. Dickoff. Fantastic. And Paul Serres?
I'm @PaulSerres.
Fantastic. As we said, thank you so much for listening. We really, really appreciate it, and hopefully we will get some feedback from you this week. We will, of course, be back next week when hopefully our run in the FA Cup continues. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you then.
Thank you.
Cheers.